welcome to the Music and Love Lecture Series. We are thrilled to see so many of you here at the University of Tennessee at Martin, and we cannot wait to reach many more of you on our podcast. Today, it is our extreme pleasure to welcome Miss Brianna R. Priester. Brianna R. Priester, MTBC, is a seasoned music therapist and educator who specializes in early intervention, family coaching, and classroom inclusion. Ooh, spicy. As a thriving business owner, Brianna currently works with families and children ages birth to three, refugee populations, children and adolescents, trauma survivors, and serves as the chair of the Virginia State Task Force for Music Therapy. She has recently been featured in the Daily News Record of Harrisonburg, Virginia. That's a big one. And Radford University's College of Visual and Performing Arts online publication in Radford, Virginia. Brianna is passionate about music for every learner and enjoys time with her husband, cats, plant-based holistic medicine, and a regular yoga practice that supports emotional and physical health. We are so thrilled to have Brianna R. Priester today.
Thanks for having me. It is super weird to hear somebody read about my life. I don't know if that's something that I'll ever get used to, but I'm really, really thrilled to be here. I flew in yesterday, and Tennessee has to be one of the nicest places I have ever been. Everyone was so nice. And I'm from Virginia, and we're super friendly in Virginia. My name is Brianna. Music therapy, we're going to talk more about that in depth, but MTBC is the designation after my name. And it's just music therapist board certified. So it's nothing fancy, it just means that I passed a test. Just like when you pass your practice exam and are licensed to teach in the state of Tennessee. Cool, nothing fancy. So, let's jump in. I'm so excited to be talking to you guys about the differences between music education and music therapy. If you're going to be in my class tomorrow morning, hi, I'm going to be talking more about teaching to multiple or adapting to multiple learning styles, including those with IEPs and developmental diagnoses. So we're not going to talk about that tonight too much, but we're going to talk about the differences between music education and music therapy and how you can work together to kind of cultivate a community of inclusion. So when we're talking about stewarding young learners, right, whether they're elementary or middle or even at the collegiate level, right, as human beings, we continue to be learners. It's how we survive. It's how we get our basic needs met. And it's also how we maintain curiosity about a variety of different things in our lives, right? So when we're setting the table for an environment of learning, we have to kind of understand some of the things that we're talking about. So let's just go ahead and quickly do some defining. So to you, and we're talking about personal philosophy, right? If you haven't taken classes that discuss teaching philosophy yet, that's okay. You will evolve into that as you continue to grow and learn as your own teacher and student. But to you, what is music education? Just someone tell me. Be brave. What is music education? Yes.
Feeding into young minds and really developing the love of music, even if they're not going to pursue it as a career.
Right, yeah. How many of you had music as an elementary and middle school curriculum? Thank God. Yeah, most of you, right? Okay, good. So we're feeding that love of learning and love of music. Amen to you. What else? Yeah.
Providing a diverse kind of learning style, so it's like interactive history and interactive culture.
Yeah, I love that. Continuing, and that's actually one of the 10 functions of music, and I can show you that really briefly. It's fascinating. Continuing the culture of a society is one of the reasons people use music, right? That's very wise. What else? What else is music education?
Teaching music.
Teaching music, elements of music, rhythm, dynamics, tempo, group music making, improvisation, right? We're going to do a little bit of that in a minute. What else? Okay, cool. Three. We'll go with that. Okay, what is music therapy? What is? Does anybody have an idea?
It's like using music as a medicinal or in place of a medicinal like prescription or something.
Yeah, music therapy as a non-pharmacological support for health and wellness. Good.
So more research-based side of music when it combines with medical fields.
Yeah, we want to understand why music is an effective tool. And Oliver Sacks, actually, are you familiar with Oliver Sacks? He is a world-renowned British psychologist who actually did a series of MRI brain scans to figure out how music affects the brain. If we have time, or if you can stay after, we will definitely, I'll show that to you. It's really fascinating. Yes, so music therapy, just generally defined, and depending on what field you're in, it can be defined lots of different ways. We talked earlier, and I was like, you could do this, or you could do this, and you could do this, but really, it depends on who you are. So we're just going to basically say that music therapy is the use of music for clinical non-musical goals to support people in their own personal growth and change, right? So let's break that down. We're using music as a tool to target clinical goals. Clinical goals can mean medical, right? I was a hospital music therapist for a handful of months back as a student. We were definitely working on clinical medical goals, right? Procedure support, non-pharmacological pain management. All of these things are very effective. In my private practice, working with the 0-3 family coaching model, I'm working on things like communication skills. Why is this child, why are they not developing? Why are their speech skills not developing? And how can I use music to support that? I'm working with anger management with some preteens. I work with people who have experienced emotional trauma in mental health settings. It really depends on the work that you feel called, is how you use these clinical tools to support the work of music therapy. Does that make sense? Is that clear as mud? Yeah. So here are some key talking points that I have kind of come upon in preparing for this. So if you're listening on the podcast, what you can see right now, or what you can't see right now, is that I have a list of components of music education here. And the first one is guided by curriculum, right? NAFME has a standard that all music educators are taught. Are you familiar with the NAFME standards of music education?
Yes.
Excellent, yep. And so all of the lesson plans that you cultivate fit in with that standard of education as well as the state curriculum guidelines, right? In Tennessee, you have different state curriculum guidelines than I do in Virginia, than I did in Indiana and Ohio. When you become a teacher, you teach to those, right? In addition with all of the other wonderful things that we do as music teachers. Thank heavens that music education is not a standardized curriculum yet. Right? We do have some standardization, but you're not assessing your students based on teaching specific concepts. But you are guided by curriculum, and it's mandated by the state, right? Thankfully, state-mandated music programs still exist. That's why you get funding, right? Your state gives your school district funding, and your school district gives it to your school, and then your principal hopefully gives it to you, right? That's why it's important to be a mindful advocate for your programs, and to connect with all of the people in your district and your administrators. You're focused on musical elements, right? You're teaching and assessing your students based off of a specific number of musical elements, right? We just mentioned it, tempo, timbre, dynamics, all of those things are what you are teaching to your students. You have performance elements, not always, right? But you and your students will put together some sort of organized performance for the teachers, for the other students, for their families, hopefully well supported by your other faculty members and administrators, right? There is a performance element affiliated with music education. Your class size is one teacher to 20 or 30 students. I don't know what the general class size here in Tennessee is, but in Virginia where I live, we have between 20 and 30 students, 25, 28 being kind of the average number. Public education is growing and growing and growing. And where I live in Virginia, we have a large refugee population. So it influences the class sizes in addition to the families who have been living there for a long time. Also, you as an educator receive music-centered training. Your training is all about music with a handful of general education credits on the side, right? You take science, you take a math class, et cetera, et cetera. And I put et cetera because I don't know what else you're taking. So whatever you have as part of your curriculum, right,
thankfully you have, Dr. Ammerman told me you have a number of exceptional learner classes that you take, which is fantastic. If you can believe it, those are not always required by education programs. So we're sending stewards of young minds into the world without preparing them completely, right? Talk about setting the table. We're creating an architecture, right? An architecture for learning and growing. This is the bonework. This is the framework for music education. Did I miss anything? Is there anything that you think is important to add to this framework? No? If it comes up, you let me know. Okay, here are the components of music therapy. These are not all of the components. Just like the last slide was not all of the components of music education. If you are listening on the podcast, I'm sorry you can't see this. It's a very lovely teal color, and we're going to talk about the different components of music therapy. So in music therapy, the musical interactions are guided by clinical need, non-musical, okay? So what that means is that I'm going to write a goal or an objective for an individual of any age based off of a clinical need. And I'll do that right now. So, no, I won't do that right now. I only have 49 minutes left. Okay, so it's non-musical. I'm going to use music and musical elements to work on that goal, but what I'm asking them to do is non-musical. And it just so happens that the music is present and is often very distracting and enjoyable, so they're working on it without realizing it. I tell my families of small children that it's bribery, because I'm getting them to do something that's hard, and they forget that it's hard, and then they do it, which is great. Not always, but sometimes. We are under continuous assessment in music therapy, right? So when you're talking about education assessment, you're setting up milestones or touch points for them. So after you teach 6 lessons, you're going to assess the content. Or you're teaching, and then the next lesson you're assessing, and then you're reframing and continuing forward. In music therapy, we are under continuous assessment. So if I'm working with a client towards a counting goal, right, so non-musical, I want them to learn how to count. I want them to learn how to count past 15, okay? Not just 10, but past 15. If I'm working on that, and they have 3 sessions in a row that they're not able to hit the number 15 for any number of reasons, then I am reassessing that and moving forward, right? So it's a feedback cycle where they're under constant and continuous assessment. And this is positive. We think of assessment as like, this is intimidating, right? They're not going to hit their milestone, or this goal is never going to be addressed, or if I don't hit my assessment milestones, my funding is going to be taken away, right? In music therapy, that is why we have objective documentation that monitors whether or not our client is making progress and whatever information we can use to support that. Maybe their aide gave them their medicine at the wrong time. I have had clients who have slept through sessions and I've been really frustrated, and then come to find out their aide accidentally gave them the medicine an hour early. Right? That's not good, right? Or if you're funded by a Medicaid company, and I'm not sure how that works in the state of Tennessee. Virginia is very odd, but when I worked and lived in Indiana, we were funded for adult services through the Medicaid waiver. If someone wasn't hitting their milestones, their team annually reviewed their documents, and they needed to understand why this person wasn't hitting their milestones. So, continuous assessment. Need-based. Not everybody needs music therapy. It would be awesome if everyone had music therapy, or if even the people who needed music therapy had access to it, right? But not everybody does. So music therapy is need-based, right? So as a neurotypical adult, I don't need music therapy. But an individual who is not neurotypical, who might be living with an intellectual delay, an autism spectrum diagnosis, or even an experience of death with grief and loss in their adult life, they might need the support of music therapy so that they can process their experience and achieve their best life experience, quality of life, right? So not everybody needs it. But in a public school setting, it should be that every child has access to arts education, right? So that's a direct contrast. And I could climb up on my courthouse steps and talk to you about inclusion in music education, but I'm going to save that for tomorrow. So musical elements are a tool, they are not the result, right? So as an educator, part of my job is to assess whether or not my third grade students can play three bag songs by December on their recorder, right? That's one of my musical goals. Can they do it? Have I provided an environment for them which is conducive for learning three bag songs, right? Can they play them together? And can they play them independently, right? Music making as a group and music making independently. And then, if I was really clever, I would say, hey, can we play them at different dynamic levels? In music therapy, musical elements are a tool, okay? I'm going to use tempo to support someone in walking, or I'm going to use musical holding to support someone who perhaps is recovering from a stroke while they prepare to take another step, right? Walking. We receive, as music therapists, we receive clinical focused training. So in addition to all of the core curricula for music education, we take clinical skills classes for how to use musical instruments therapeutically. Who would have even thought that that would be something that's important for a young therapist to know, right? But if I need you, right, to make eye contact with me, and that's one of your goals, and I'm all the way over here, and I want you to look at me, but you really like this xylophone, and that's your top priority, is to get to the xylophone, but my top priority is to have you to make eye contact with me, I'm going to therapeutically use this instrument to get you to look at me, right? But I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't gone through clinical, I mean, maybe if I was a clever person or teacher, right? But we also take techniques and counseling skills. How do you ask an open-ended question? How do you support someone who is having an active emotional experience, right? What are the tools that we need as musicians that add the therapeutic component into what we're offering? Clinical focus training. Also, when you do practicum placements as education students, we do the same. We get 1 hour a week, or depending on your program, to go into environments to offer music therapy sessions as students, and we're directly supervised by a board-certified music therapist. It's very similar to what you do, right? You do, as educators, you do student teaching. As music therapists, we have a 900-hour clinical internship, and then we sit for an exam, the national exam that gives us our credentials after we're done. So they're very similar in a lot of ways. Who wants to tell me the biggest difference between education and therapy? There are lots of them, but take a guess at what trickled down from that conversation.
Yeah. The desired results.
Right, the outcomes. Right, outcomes in music therapy, are they musical or non-musical?
Non-musical.
Non-musical, right. Outcomes in education, musical or non-musical?
Non-musical.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so let's do some experientials.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Okay, sorry, I have 12 bubbles. So those of you who don't get bubbles can do the other stuff. Have some bubbles.
I'm all.
You guys like bubbles?
Yes.
Oh, who doesn't like bubbles? You.
I know.
I know. Did you wake up today and think, God, I just hope there are bubbles?
I have some.
Okay. Okay. Will you be my stop start person? But that I would really appreciate that if you would come meet my start and stop person. Okay. So here we have bubbles. You might just be careful opening them. I haven't opened them yet. I don't know what's gonna happen.
That.
Okay, great. So be careful. So if you go ahead and open your bubbles, give them. I'm gonna count down from five. I want you to blow as many bubbles as you possibly can in 5 seconds. Ready?
Oh.
Set. You gotta hurry. Go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Freeze. Did you get as many bubbles as you possibly could?
Okay.
Okay, you're gonna have to do it again. Ready? Go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, freeze.
Oh.
Okay, excellent. Now I want to know, how quickly can you blow those bubbles?
Not very fast.
Okay, so what I'm talking about is this. Can you inhale and blow? Inhale and blow. How fast can you do that?
We have to dip each time.
Do you? I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a challenge on the table. We can blow bubbles very fast, but some of you are blowing lots of bubbles very quickly. Yeah.
It takes slower.
Okay, so now I want to know how slowly can you blow the bubbles? Like, how long does it take you to blow one bubble?
Oh!
How? It's hard to blow just one bubble, isn't it? Fascinating. Okay, so what would you say if I told you that these bubbles were going to serve as an assessment tool for tempo, We're gonna assess tempo.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So now that I know that you can blow bubbles both quickly and slowly.
Oh geez.
We're gonna blow some bubbles. We're gonna blow some more bubbles.
Well,
I think you can do it.
This is my favorite recording.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Cheyenne, did you want bubbles?
Okay,
no,
guys.
I'm good.
What's on the screen?
Don't start it yet.
Okay, so as future educators, right, what am I going to ask? What do you anticipate me asking you to do?
Blow fast.
Because?
It's fast.
Right, it has a fast tempo. So what I'm going to do as your educator in this moment is I'm going to watch every single one of you blow bubbles, right? And then I'm going to additionally watch if you're blowing them on the downbeat or if you're just blowing them as fast as you can. Right? That's a multi-level assessment tool, right? Can they blow bubbles with the music that reflects in a way that appropriately reflects the tempo? And then two, are they recognizing the beat, right? Are they establishing a steady beat? Which we all know as music educators is one of those foundational practices that we all teach in music. Okay, Chase, ready? Ready?
No.
You guys, are you ready? Get ready.
I don't know which one to do.
You were born ready. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go.
For this moment.
I don't see very many bubbles.
This is hard work.
Look at the bubbles!
Oh, they're doing so good.
I've got one bubble left.
Excellent. 3, 2, 1, stop. Hey! You guys have great impulse control. Good job. Okay, guys, so help me out. We just did an experience with a piece of music that was very fast, right? We're going to compare and contrast that. So if you were a group of second graders or first graders, I would say, guys, if we just went really fast, now we want to do the opposite of that, right? Comparison, opposite, same, different. What is the opposite of fast?
Slow,
right? Hopefully, as the educator, I would have spent my previous class talking about that, right? So now I want to know if you can blow your bubbles slowly like this piece of music. Okay? Ready? 3, 2, 1. Wait, what song is this?
Summertime.
Yeah, so we're not just using classical music in the music education classroom, right? You're gonna have kids who grew up on this, or maybe I could have picked some ballad from the 70s, right, or the 80s. I thought about Love Me Tender from Elvis, but because I love him. But anyway, we picked Summertime. Ready? Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. Stop. Yeah, exactly. So reflect to me what it was like. I have two different questions for you. Did you enjoy blowing the bubbles quickly? And which tempo did you feel most successful at?
Slow.
Okay, hold on. Answer my first question. I should have asked them separately. Sorry, I'm excited. So what did it feel like to try to blow those bubbles really quickly?
Anxiety.
Yes. Right, like, I can't make that.
Yeah, the bubbles didn't come out.
Right.
There were no bubbles.
Right. So as an educator, you are always in the position as their steward, as their teacher, to set them up for success. By asking you to blow bubbles at a somewhat outrageous speed, was I setting you up for success?
No.
No. Mm-mm. But when we practice blowing bubbles, right, I said, I want you to go as fast as you can. And you did it, right? So I know that you can do it. Whether or not you can do it with the music is an entirely different concept, right? So I know that you recognize the differences between fast and slow, even though while the music was playing, you were having a different experience. So we can talk about that more in a minute, but tell me now, at which tempo did you feel most successful?
Slow.
Slow, yeah. And if you disagree, I wanna hear why in just a minute. So why at the slow tempo did you feel more successful?
You had time to prepare.
Time to prepare. Right. Yeah.
To blow bubbles, you have to take really slow, deep, low breaths. Because you can't just blow really, really hard because they don't come out of the little tiny. You burst the thing on the inside. Mm-hmm. So when it's slower, you're more relaxed, and relaxed breath makes more bubbles.
Yeah. So I didn't want bubbles. I wanted something else. Anybody guess what I wanted instead of bubbles?
Bubble gum.
What?
Probably balloons.
Balloons. Almost latex allergy. It's a deterrent.
Oh.
Yeah.
So not
balloons.
Huh?
I'm allergic to latex.
Uh-huh. Pinwheels. Have you ever used pinwheels?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Bringing a suitcase full of pinwheels from Virginia wasn't super realistic. But would that have felt more autonomous as the student? And that's, yeah. So you have options. Your options are unlimited. Yeah.
You're talking about food?
Mm-mm. Nope, they're little...
That's super real. No, I mean,
I have had those, and those are delicious. But I'm talking about, they're on a stick, and they're cut out of, like, thin foil, and the blades are shaped in a way, that if you blow on it, it can go fast or it can go slow.
So
they put them in gardens, or they even have children at fairs. So, anyway.
Sorry.
That would be another option. So, if you thought fast was easier, yeah, why was that?
I didn't have to spend too much time worrying about it. Like, it's either going to come out or it's not, but I have to try again really fast.
Ah, so there's not enough time to be, like, intentionally dipping the stick. And sure, I can get that. Yeah.
For me, whenever I was trying to blow slowly, it was like, well, not this, but it, like I couldn't blow it, like, correctly to be able to get it come out slowly and have a lot of bubbles come out at one time.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's another opportunity for a student to be like, this isn't quite working out, right? Okay, so we're gonna switch this. We're gonna turn off the educator brain for a minute, and we're gonna flip on the therapy brain. So when you blow bubbles, what happens to your body in order to make that bubble come out of the stick?
Breathe.
You have to breathe.
Controlled breathing,
yes, exactly. You have to measure your breath in a way that allows your exhalation, your oral motor skills, your mouth and your tongue to all be synced up at the same time so that you can blow through that tiny hole at the end of the stick, okay? If I'm working with an individual who has trouble breathing, who has maybe suffered a stroke and is not able to necessarily always control their body, I blow bubbles, right? Also with children who are struggling with oral motor skills, a lot of my Down syndrome clients I blow bubbles with because they have to go like this, right? How many muscles does it take to make the O shape with your mouth?
A lot.
Mm-hmm. Also, if I'm super tense and tight and my body doesn't have the movement to breathe, right, you have to be relaxed to inhale, right? That's why the floating ribs are called floating ribs, because they're supposed to move, right? But if you hold them down, they can't move. So in the therapeutic context, I might write a goal that says, during bubble blowing intervention, client name will attempt to blow bubbles in 33% of trials for 3 consecutive sessions within 2 verbal prompts from music therapist, right? As a clinician, I can pass that to any other clinician and they'll know, okay, so we want this person to blow a bubble, and I know what it looks like when someone is going to blow a bubble. I want this person to blow a bubble, and I want them to at least try it, right? So if they've had a stroke and they can't use the left side of their face, the right side of their face is still going to move to attempt to blow the bubble, isn't it? Yeah, in most cases. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm measuring, right? Or if they're having trouble breathing, let's say that they're a child who's been in the hospital receiving cancer treatments. They spend all of that time in a bed, right? They don't get to go outside. They don't get to walk around. They don't get to stretch their bodies and move their bodies. So I might use bubble blowing in support of the respiratory therapy that they're receiving to help them to prevent them from getting pneumonia, right? And in that case, I might say, client name will engage in bubble blowing experience with music therapist for 10 minutes once a day, right? That gets to be more vague because I just want them to blow bubbles. I just want them to breathe, right? But as an educator, I'm using, and I might play the same music, right? Because it's way more fun to blow bubbles to music than it is to just blow bubbles. At least that's my perspective. So those are two vastly different reasons that we would use music and bubbles together, right? To assess tempo and group unity, right, as an educator, to assess specific non-musical clinical goals as a therapist. Okay, thank you. The next, I need 2 volunteers. So you didn't get bubbles?
You're good.
Okay.
I just like listening.
Okay, so if you'll come to the xylophone here on the left. You did the xylophone on the right.
Oh, yes.
Thanks. Okay, cool. So I'm going to model it, and then I'm going to need someone to come wear this really super sweet butterfly mask.
Whoa.
In a minute. Okay?
Oh.
Okay. So I look majestic, don't I?
Absolutely.
It's my true calling is to wear a butterfly mask. Okay, so here's what I'm going to ask you to do, right? We're going to assess recognition, note recognition, high sounds versus low sounds, right? Have you ever heard a group of preschoolers sing?
Yes.
Some of them sing like this, and some of them sing like this, and some of them just sing like this, and they don't change their inflection at all, right? My nephew's 5, he's in preschool, and he is learning this song about, I wish I remembered the words, but he goes to a Christian-based preschool, and so they were singing about God, and they were singing about love. God goes round in a circle. No? Nobody? Okay, that's fine. But he was going, love goes round in a circle. Right? He's 5.
That's how you know.
Right. So if I was a kindergarten teacher, right, or even a preschool teacher, or even, it just, I think some of it depends on child development, right? Is your school in a school district that has higher socioeconomics? Right, research shows that children who grow up in environments that have higher socioeconomics are more academically advanced in elementary school, right? So depending on where your kids are is what age group you're gonna do this. Okay, so I wrote this song about a butterfly when I was standing in Walmart because I wanted to have something that I wanted to share with you. So when you hear me sing like this, I want you to play a high note. Is there a high note on your xylophone?
Yes.
Yeah, can you play it for me? Lovely, what about you? You have a high note on your xylophone? Okay, yes. And when you hear me sing like this, can you play a low note? Yeah, what about you? Excellent, right. So when you hear me sing a high note, what are you gonna do? Tell me with your words, what are you gonna do?
Play a high note.
Play a high note. And when you hear me sing a low note, what are you gonna do?
Play a low note.
Play a low note, yeah. Can you play a low note? Excellent. Okay. All right. So I'm going to play you this little ditty. And really, all I'm doing is I'm wanting you to play high notes and low notes. This would be part of the first, one of the lessons in the beginning of a sequence, right? Because ultimately, I would want you to accompany yourselves,
right? You don't need me. My job as your steward is to teach you so that you can be independent and make music on your own, right? Isn't that what we want? We want our students to have enough autonomy in their own music making so that they can be independent and improvisational and spontaneous and their brilliant little bodies, right, and minds that they are. That's what we want. Okay. All right, you ready? You look ready. Okay, here we go. Butterfly, butterfly, fly so high. Three times. One, two, three. Good job. Butterfly, butterfly, touch the sky, sky, sky. Good job. Butterfly, butterfly, fly so low. Good job. You're my butterfly, fly so low. Yeah, okay, so I'm in the key of G. Can you find your sol or your G? We're gonna play on quarter notes. So you'll play ta, 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 your turn. Good job. Okay, who wants to be my butterfly? Keep going, don't stop. Okay, we're gonna take turns. You wanna go first? Okay, here we go. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Oh my God. They're playing the xylophone. They're waiting. They're not stopping. Okay. All right. So what she's going to do, because I believe that multi-sensory learning is the best for every student, I'm never going to calm down from that. So what she's going to do is she's going to use her body to tell you where she wants you to play. Okay? So when she wants you to play high, she's going to lift her arms up way up high. Right? And when she wants you to play low, she's going to lower her arms way down low towards the floor. Right? Yep. Okay? It's like interpretive dance. Okay? Right? All right. And I'm going to follow her because that's my job, right, as the steward, is to make sure she feels supported. Right? You guys are doing a good job. I just picked that because I like it. So let's change the key. What key?
C.
Okay. And you know what? We're gonna do this a little more andante. Okay, here we go. Butterfly, butterfly, touch the sky. Yeah, so we're using xylophone player to play high notes. Nice job. Here we go. Butterfly, butterfly, touch the go so low. What are we doing? I don't even remember. Butterfly, butterfly, fly so high. Good job.
Yes.
Butterfly, butterfly, fly so. Okay. All right.
Oh yes.
We're doing it.
Thank you. High five. Good
Thanks,
job.
Man.
Okay. So.
Good job, everybody.
As a music educator, What? Thank you. What are we doing? What are we doing? What is the point?
We are seeing if they can hold a steady beat, also if they recognize the difference between higher and lower pitches.
Right. Totally. Huh?
Listening skills.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm following my butterflies, right, which enhances classroom autonomy. It's actually improvisation. I change my melody to reflect the movement of the butterfly, and then my xylophone players followed me.
Self-expression.
Self-expression. And being able to offer opportunities where your students feel like they have the opportunity to create independently of the teacher is super important, right? And as an educator, right, you could be listening to this and thinking, oh my God, this is a recipe for disaster. I'm gonna have 35-year-olds running like crazy, right? Yeah, yeah, it's sometimes it's madness, right? But as their teacher, you have the opportunity to cultivate a standard of expectation in your classroom where every child feels like they have the opportunity to stand up in front of their peers without being disrespected. It takes a stalwart, compassionate teacher to cultivate an environment like that. And I believe that every teacher has the opportunity to do that, right, if they continue to learn and grow. Okay, so as an educator, right, I'm assessing those very concrete things. I could even add in a tempo change, right, if I had done the tempo, if the lesson plan for tempo had been right before this, right? Or I could even have a drummer, right? Do I need the guitar? No, I can have a drummer. I can have someone come and play the drums or play the boom whackers, play the xylophone. You have unlimited options here, right? Okay, as a therapist, taking off the education hat and putting on the therapy hat, okay, what could you presume some of the goals are within this experience? Yeah.
Fine motor skills.
Fine motor skills, tell me more about that.
Well, I mean, the barn is pretty small, and you have to have the coordination with hand to hold the mallet,
mm-hmm.
coordination to hit the mallet in time, and coordination to hit the mallet on the bar in time.
Yeah, so. Right. So you're talking, let's like fine tune that, because it's a really lovely explanation. What she's talking about is she's talking about gross motor movement with the large muscles in the arm. She's talking about palmar grasp and fine motor skills with the closure and sustained squeeze of the hand. And she's also talking about long-term attending, right? Long-term attending. I sang butterfly, butterfly, fly so high, butterfly, butterfly, fly so low. Four times, I sang four short verses, right? Probably taking less than a minute. But attending is a super important skill that children with multiple intellectual and developmental diagnoses do not have. And it's one of the biggest reasons that they are not included in classroom settings, right? Because they don't necessarily have the attending skills to be in a class that is an hour long without being disruptive. Or let's change that, because that's not right. Without seeking the things that they need to be okay. Right, self-stimulating behaviors, which includes movement, perhaps self-injurious behavior, like biting or hitting their head on the floor, or perhaps they pace, right? All of these things are typically considered disruptive for a classroom setting, right? But here's the kicker. If you are an arts educator, you have the unique opportunity to change that culture, right? If you notice that your child with an autism spectrum diagnosis starts rocking, right, or starts to get up to pace, you either prepare your classroom so that they're okay to do that, or you give everybody an opportunity where they can rock together, or they can get up and move around the room, right? So if I'm in that situation as an educator, I'm gonna say, ooh, Timmy, you look like you're ready to get up and move around. Would you like to be a butterfly, right? I am rescripting that for him, and I'm putting my therapy hat back on and saying, these children are smart children. They experience shame, right? And so as their teacher, if I'm not able to change the way that feels for them, if I continue to perpetuate the shame culture that we are affiliating in public education with children with disabilities, shame on me. And it is part of my job as his steward to change the way that that happens, right? So I'm going to give him the mask, And we're going to switch up the xylophone players, and we're going to switch everything. Everyone's going to get up and move, right? We're all in it together. He's going to wear the mask, and we're going to do the exact same thing. Not every child is the same. That is not a solution for every child, right? But that is part of the change that has to happen. And what we don't always remember in the struggle of making sure that every child gets a music education, right, is that when we use music, music is a whole brain experience. Active music making, active music listening, it is all a whole brain experience. It reduces stress levels. Did you know that singing in choirs increases the nitric oxide in the blood level and actually helps reduce stress response? Super important, right? So if we are including special learners in our education classrooms, we're leveling the playing field, right? We're leveling the playing field because we're activating everybody's entire brain. We're activating everybody's entire breath system, right? Okay, so I know some of you have to go to rehearsals, and we could keep at this. I could show you some of my favorite things. I could tell you whatever you needed to ask, but for those of you who have rehearsal in 4 minutes, let's take a second so that you can go. Anybody else have to leave? Bye. Okay, bye.
Thank you for this.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I have to be there.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for coming. Enjoy your rehearsal. So let's take a minute to pause because I feel like I have given you a lot of information, a lot of comparison, a lot of different things to think about. Do you have any questions that you'd like to ask? Yeah.
I know you, work with therapy for people who have mental and physical disabilities. Do you, what about therapy with, I don't know how you word it, like in a counseling sort of way?
Psychotherapy, like talk?
Mm-hmm.
So do I collaborate with other licensed clinical counselors?
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes. In some mental health settings, individuals who receive music therapy, sometimes it's ordered by an attending or their primary psychotherapist. And so they would come to us and, you know, we would go through the whole spiel of like why they're there and setting up an environment where they feel like they can work on their stuff. Or we would, you know, work on the process of building rapport in a way that felt non-threatening. Because I think when you're working with mental health, you are working in an environment that is already full of expectation. And you're working in an environment where there's lots of, like, I'm doing this with my hands, but I don't know how to describe it. Like, people are at odds with themselves, but also with their care providers, right? And so my job sometimes as a music therapist is to create a safe environment where they can feel autonomous with their own experience. So I don't know if that answers your question. Mental health music therapists who specialize in working in mental health are very skilled. A lot of them are social workers. A lot of them have received advanced therapeutic and clinical training. And it's not even in techniques of counseling. Sometimes it's in crisis management, right? Or sometimes it's in trauma management. And so it just really, I hate to give this answer because I hate it when people give me this answer, but it really depends on who you are as a clinician. Yeah, it's a very thoughtful question.
How is music therapy prescribed by like a primary care or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
But then also, is there a lot of, like, as your experience, do people believe and support music therapy?
Okay, cool. So you asked, how does one receive a referral from a PCP?
Yeah.
And two, you asked, what is the climate for music therapy acceptance in the United States?
Yeah, and those kind of go along as in, like, would a primary care provider, like, not typically, like, prescribe music therapy? Or do they do that? I don't know if prescribe is the right word.
Yeah, prescribe. I have had a number of clients who give me scripts because in order for insurance companies to reimburse for a service, you have to have a script for it, right? That's how you get medicine. That's how you get CT scans. That's how you get... So in some states, PCPs or specialists from any type of medical center can write a script for music therapy services. in the ICD-9 and the DSM-4. So ICD is International Code of Diseases, International ICD, yeah. And then the DSM Diagnostic and Statistic Manual that all mental health and doctors use to describe illnesses, words. So these are the containers through which diseases and illnesses are classified and categorized. In the ICD-9, music therapy had a code. In the ICD-10 and DSM-5, and in the ICD-10, music therapy does not have a code. So it depends on the physician. It depends on the physician's philosophy, right? So as an educator, you subscribe to philosophies about teaching and about learning. As a therapist, I subscribe to philosophies about human existence and mental health and wellness. You know, they're same but different. And so it depends on if I find a doctor who aligns with my philosophical belief system. And that's part of the trickiness of being an allied healthcare professional, because I'm going to have to talk to doctors who have no clue what music therapy is, and I'm going to have to explain to them very quickly, because they're very busy, right? I'm going to have to explain to them very quickly why music therapy is important and why this child needs a prescription, or why this individual needs a note of, you know, of recommendation from their doctor to an insurance company for music therapy services. Yeah. So there are lots of PCPs and surgeons and medical healthcare professionals of the standard type that do prescribe music therapy services. That trickles down into social workers and healthcare professionals, and that also trickles down into naturopathic and holistic wellness practitioners as well. So all of those people can refer for music therapy, but also self-referral is an important component to referral process for music therapists and their clients, because if I don't feel right, if I don't feel okay inside my own body or inside my own thoughts, but I don't have a trusted team who I can go to, part of that process, part of that healing process for me, or part of that internal autonomy process for me is going to be finding someone who I feel safe with. So self-referral is an important component of music therapy. Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like I didn't answer your question well. Did I answer your question, Lana?
Just the focus of the question being, what have you gotten me to do in this situation? If you have gotten me to do that. With music therapy, how, I know you put together that culture, that environment where they feel willing and able to open up about some different things, but I didn't know if you used music like we've done with this today, or if you're like, hey, write a song about it, or something like that.
So my mental health experience is very limited. I only focus on that once as a practicum student. Mm-hmm. In my family, I have experienced like mental health and how it affects my family members. And so that did not feel like an appropriate environment for me. In music therapy, we call that dual relationship. Like, as someone who was very close to an individual who suffers greatly with emotional mental health, it felt too personal, right? But I know lots of therapists who have either, have managed their own emotional health and wellness and are very powerful clinicians, or have had a similar situation like me and are very powerful clinicians. So it's the discernment of the professional, I guess, is the way to answer that question about experience. But one of the tools that I did use when I was a clinician was songwriting. And so when you're in mental health settings, your clients are oftentimes like very heavily medicated, or they're in a disassociative state. Are you guys familiar with that word? Disassociative, okay. And so in those states, what is important is for them to self-identify in a way that is safe and multifunctioning, in a way that's gentle, right? Because if you're on a lot of medication, you're not able to always check in with yourself. You're not always offered an opportunity to do that. So we called it, is a version of the Worried Man Blues. Are you familiar with that? Okay, so the Worried Man Blues goes like this. And then I'll show you what I used to use. So, it takes a worried man to sing the worried blues, yeah? It takes a worried man to sing the worried blues. It takes a worried man, yeah? To sing the worried blues. I forgot the words. Yeah. So I, you know, you sing the worried man blues. It's just a 12 or 16 bar blues progression, right? But it's a foundation for songwriting, right? So what if I change the words? So what my goal as the clinician is to find out where you're at, right? Is to find out where you're at. You're coming to my group and I have all of these things planned. That's my agenda. Right, I am prepared to be in this moment with you, right? But if I don't know you and I don't know where you're at, am I being an effective clinician? No, I'm just bringing my expectations to the table and hoping that you get on the same page. Get on my level, right? Is that appropriate? No! Right, if you say to someone and you're offering the therapeutic environment and you're like, get on my level, this is my priority, right? Right? You should turn around and go home and reassess, right? And then see if you can try again. So what I need to know now is where you're at, right? If I'm going to show up for you, I need to know where you're at. And if you can't tell me, that's okay, right? So let's do it. Woke up this morning and I was feeling so tired. I'll go first, I'll tell you. Because yesterday I woke up at 3 a.m. to take a flight to Tennessee. By the end of the day, I really want to feel rested, right? So what do you know about me now?
You woke up really early.
I woke up really early and I was feeling
really tired.
Right? So really tired. But what's my personal goal?
To feel rested.
To feel rested, right? Okay. That statement is reasonable, right? It's reasonable. I'm not saying I want to win $1 million, right? I'm not saying that I want to steal a race car, right? Or break out of jail. Those are all reasonable things that I have expressed, right? Okay, you want to go first? Okay, I'll sing it, you just tell me, okay? All right. Woke up this morning and you were feeling so...
Rested.
Congratulations. Woke up this morning and you were feeling so rested, right? By the end of the day, you really want to feel...
Not stressed.
Oh, not stressed. Yeah. Excellent. You wanna... Let's see. Do you wanna go next?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, you can pass. This is a no pressure situation.
I don't know, I'm feeling similar to Mason, so.
Okay, all right, so woke up this morning, I was feeling like Mason, or similar to Mason. Woke up this morning, and I was feeling like Mason. By the end of the day, I really want to feel. Okay, I don't know how I want to feel. We're gonna play it by ear and see what happens. Yeah. Okay, excellent. You wanna go next?
Sure.
Okay. Woke up this morning and I was feeling so
calm.
What's it like? Woke up this morning and I was feeling so calm. By the end of the day, I really want to feel.
Down with drumming so I don't have to play for an hour.
Down with drumming so I don't have to play for an hour. Right, okay, cool. So what if you had said, I feel anxious, and I'm like, cool, right? And I continue. Right? Or you say you feel anxious, and I'm like, oh, okay, and I don't acknowledge that, right? So it has been put into the space that someone is having an experience, right? And as people who all have experiences, right, we can relate in some way to what has been said, right? And so our job as group members is to relate to that expression, but to also give the space where that's acceptable, right? So if I said, woke up this morning and you were feeling so anxious. Oh my God, me too. Anybody else ever felt anxious when they wake up? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, totally, right? Then everyone's on the same page, the group is together. Okay, we're gonna pause. Bye guys.
Sorry.
You guys probably have to go.
I hope you enjoyed listening to Brianna Priester this week as much as we did. Music Ed Love would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. And we hope you'll take a moment to leave us a review on iTunes. We hope you'll return for our next episode titled Nuggets of Knowledge. Man, now I'm really hungry. You're seasoned and now we have nuggets. In which we delve into a variety of music ed topics with Grammy finalists Steve Boutsinas and Henry County High School Orchestra Director Brent Eidelman. We hope that this week you'll be able to sprinkle a little stardust on all of your students, uncover the greatness within a few more humans, and send those stars through the stratosphere. Happy music, friends. I would like to